Thank you so much for joining me this morning. I'm really grateful for your time.
You're welcome. It's a beautiful day here in Santa Fe.
Well, I would like to introduce you. This is Lisa Law, famous photographer, infamous and famous for flashing on the 60s. And you have had an incredible history and now have a museum down in Santa Fe to share with the world what you've been doing over the years.
Yes, I had it before 5 years ago at Museo Cultural, but it was only in 1,200 square feet. This is in 4,500 square feet. So I am right on the plaza, so people just walking down the street see the sign, they come up, and then they're blown away. It's just too much for them to handle because they had no idea they were going to see this many photographs of the 60s, a human being, Monterey Pop, Woodstock, posters. It's all sorts of artifacts. And now I'm adding stories to the pictures because people walk by the picture and they'll say, who's that? Like, who's Victor Maymutis? So I wrote that Victor Maymutis was Bob Dylan's road manager. And when you watch a documentary, you see this tall guy with curly dark hair kind of guarding him. That's Victor Maymutis. So I'm now adding stories to the various pictures so that you understand everything you're looking at. And it's as if I'm writing a book, you know, the picture. So during the day when there's a lull and people coming in, I will write a story and then laminate it and then put it right underneath the picture. So it's getting interesting.
Yeah, and I recently was watching the documentary you did with Jay Blakesberg, I believe is his name. Photos with Stories. And that really intrigued me, the fact that you're putting these stories together with, and people are really curious about your story and how you got started and what got you into these places that you found yourself where you were able to do these kinds of amazing things.
Yeah, they can understand it. It's like, it's a new era, and it's the era of trying to figure out what happened in the 60s.
That's wonderful.
It's interesting because, I mean, if I were dead, I wouldn't have that problem, but everybody's coming in saying, oh, I had no idea this happened, and oh, to see pictures of it like this, you know, it's just so sweet to get their comments. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. So what did get you started in all this?
Well, I was working at the Trident restaurant in Sausalito, and that was owned by the manager of the Kingston Trio. And he gave me a job being his personal manager. And then he gave me backstage passes for various events. So first of all, I'd already photographed, a few people, but I then photographed the Beatles at the Cow Palace. And after that, I photographed Peter, Paul, and Mary. And he was manager to Kingston Trio, so I had pictures of that. And then it's just that I loved photography, and my father gave me a Brownie, and I started shooting when I was six, everything that happened to me. Oh, the kids swimming, horseback rides down to Pollywog Pond in Burbank. That's where I was raised. And so I had all these pictures, and the thing about me is that I keep my negatives. I always kept my negatives. Whereas other people lost their negatives or just didn't care about them, I kept every single one in a acid-free box. And I started printing those pictures, too. So then I got known for printing those pictures. For instance, I mean, when I met my future husband at a Peter, Paul, and Mary concert in Berkeley. He was the road manager for Peter, Paul, and Mary. And I took pictures of them. And then I moved down with him to the L.A. to the castle, which was this giant castle right in front of the Frank Lloyd Wright Castle on Glendower in Los Feliz area. And he had, because he was the Peter, Paul, and Mary's road manager at one point, That was the manager of them was Albert Grossman, who was also the manager of Bob Dylan. So Bob, he got to know Bob that way, and he Bob rented a room in the castle while we were there in 1966, and I photographed him a lot. I was his cook. I was his masseuse. Went shopping with him, and we went to the Whiskey a Go-Go and watched and listened to Otis Redding. So I got up and I shot pictures of Otis Redding, and then Atlantic Records used those pictures for their promo and also for an album cover. So I was able to figure out who wanted to see these various pictures, and I got it to them.
That's great.
I'm now by the Morrison Hotel Gallery. I'm at Fetterman Gallery in L.A., Mr. Music Head, Duncan Miller in L.A., Morrison Hotel in New York. A lot of people are representing me, and so my pictures get out there. And also, I did a documentary on Woodstock because the Hog Farm, we were part of the Hog Farm with Wavy Gravy, who said, what we have in mind is breakfast in bed for $400,000. He and his group, which was us, 95 of us actually, 80 hippies and 15 Native Americans got on this jumbo jet and flew to New York and took care of the people at Woodstock. And the reason it was such a beautiful concert and nobody hurt each other is that we all took care of each other. And so the Hog Farm fed 200,000 people. And I was the one who went shopping for the Hog Farm. And I got the money from the producers, went into John Morris's trailer, and I said, I think I need some money to feed these people because they're going to be starving because there's so many people here, they can't get out to get any food. So he gave me $3,000, and then I went into town and I got another $3,000. And Peter White Rabbit and I bought 1,200 pounds of boga wheat, 1,200 pounds of oats, and sunflower seeds, and dried apricots and almonds. And when I came back with all that stuff, then I went shopping with a flatbed truck and went to farms and bought entire farms. Give me that row of cabbage, give me that row of onions, give me that row of zucchini. And then we chop it up and put it in these giant pots I bought, these giant stainless steel pots I bought in New York. And we fed out of five booths that I helped design, a kitchen and five booths, we then fed 200,000 people. And I know we did because I bought 130,000 paper plates, 130,000 Dixie cups, forks and spoons, and they were all gone.
Wow. That's an incredible feat. And you had mentioned that people were calling it a disaster, but you said, no, that's not what this is.
They wanted to call it a disaster. New York would call in and say, okay, do you want to be a disaster? What happens if you say, yes, we're a disaster, then the National Guard comes in and they take people out. They lift people out in helicopters, and they brought us some food, but not very much food. They did bring some medical supplies. We had a great amount of doctors who volunteered, who were in the audience, who volunteered to help out with cut feet, or you didn't bring your right pill or something. And we had trip tents, and we had medical tents. I mean, it was a city of 400,000 people. Mm-hmm. And we had everything going. And so we said, no, we're not a disaster. We're going to go on with the music. And we did. And that, and of course, the music was the best thing. I mean, it did Santana, Crosby, Stills, and Nash, Joan Baez, Janis Joplin. It was just fantastic. It went on and on and on. Of course, it took a while to get them to get there because they had to be flown in by a helicopter.
Yeah, because it was a literal city. Well, who was your favorite performer, if you could pick one out of Woodstock?
And Richie Havens, he was great because he lived there and he got up and sang and sang and sang until everybody got there. Who was my favorite one?
Yeah. Do you have a favorite?
The drummer of Santana.
Oh, nice.
Michael Shreve. When he did that drum solo, it was the best drum solo ever happened. It was fantastic. Oh, yeah.
That's
Michael Shreve was. But you have to understand, after I got the food going, the volunteers took over. So I didn't have to stand there and mix the food and serve it. Johanna Rock kind of watched, that's Wavy's wife, she watched over it, and I took my little Super 8 camera and went out and made a film. And that film has been used in over, I think, 50 to 100 documentaries on Woodstock. They've licensed my film. And I went out and shot what I was seeing. And the rain coming down and the tents blowing away and mud in the ground. And I only shot Quill. The only group I shot was Quill. So I was walking around digging the sites and documenting them on film and on my camera. And I didn't, basically, I did not sit in front of that stage and listen to the groups. I was out taking pictures, documenting. And so, to me, if you watch the movie, I mean, Shauna Na was even there. Can you imagine Shauna Na was there?
Yeah. Oh. Wow.
And Ravi Shankar was there. That was wonderful. And my husband taught yoga. Tom taught yoga off the stage. And you always, and I'm filming it as they're doing their breathing. I'm filming them breathing in the audience as he's doing it on stage. And then he did it over in the hog farm section too. He taught yoga. So I shot that. So I have an entire movie of Woodstock that I shot. It was almost like yesterday because I have to look at it all the time and look at these pictures all the time. And then I remember everything. Whereas other people, they don't see it till they come and see the show, the Museum of the 60s. They don't see those images. I see them all the time. That's what I concentrate on, is getting those images out to books. I'm published in over 100 books. I've done something like 25, 30 book covers of the 60s and Woodstock. And in this show here at the museum, I brought my books down. There's a beautiful bookcase in this space that we have. This space was sponsored by Peter Conis, and it's a beautiful old, over 100-year-old building, and it's got a fireplace and all these bookshelves. So in the bookshelves, you get to see all the pictures that all the books I've been published in, covers of Bob Dylan's books and Allen Ginsberg. Dancing to the Grateful Dead is on the cover of one. Timothy Leary, The Velvet Underground. They're all in these books. So you could come down and sit in this room. I bought all this furniture from Goodwill, some great furniture. And people can sit there and pick out a book and sit there and go through and read books on the 60s. So we've created a whole really wonderful scene inside of there. People, when they leave, they feel like they've been there. They've been to the 60s, and they've experienced it, and that's what I wanted them to do. And I'm hoping maybe somebody will take this on the road or want it in their city. Or in fact, there was a curator there two nights ago who said it should be in Europe. This show should be flown to Europe and put up in Europe. And I'd like to share it with more people.
I agree. You know? Yeah, and I want to thank Hal Gill, who introduced me to you through David Gans, and he's a very big proponent of yours, and we're all out there wanting to get the word out of who you are and what you've got, because it's absolutely extraordinary. And thank your dad for
really great. He is so great because he saw that Jay Blakesbury piece, and he's been donating and promoting and all the time. He's fantastic. There should be more people like Hal. Just amazing what he's done to promote the museum. And Peter Comas, who sponsored the space. And if I were to pay for this space, it would be $20,000 a month. I couldn't afford that.
Wow, that's absolutely incredible. And thank your dad for giving you that brownie. My dad's a photographer too. So we had a dark room growing up. My dad's Mark Adams. What's your dad's name?
Neeb Bacellus.
Well, thank Neeb Bacellus for bringing you up.
Neeb Bacellus, but he died when he was 45.
Well, he definitely made a gift that sixth birthday of yours go a long way.
Well, the cameraman himself, he was doing documentary films in 16 millimeter of boar hunting in Mexico and fishing in Guaymas and the riots at Warner Brothers where they hosed all the people that were there. There was a big demonstration. He was he was a union organizer, and he was doing the union organizing for the garment industry, and he filmed a lot of things relating to that. So watching him do his documenting, I said, oh, I'm going to do that myself.
Wow. And you took it a step further. You were in the right place at the right time.
Yeah.
Well, I want more people who are listening. If you're just now listening, you're listening to Lisa Law, who is calling in from New Mexico on a pre-recorded interview. I'm just going to throw that into our recorded parts here. And Lisa, we want more people to know about your product, your project, and your amazing history, and to take it on the road, and for more people to see it. So tell me more. What would you like to tell the listeners?
I did a book called Flashing on the 60s, which you can only get now on eBay, because the printer in Hong Kong threw away the plates. So I can't get any more, and they were selling like hotcakes here at the museum. But I did a movie about the book, which is called Flashing on the 60s, a tribal document. And that was sponsored by John Paul DeGioia of Paul Mitchell Hair Products.
Oh, wow.
He paid for that. He gave me $300,000, and I did a documentary film. That you could get from my site, flashingonthe60s.com.
Oh, and, that's great. That's funny. My mom and I are both hairdressers, so we're very familiar. My mom's Wendy Adams, and she was a hairdresser, and then I became a hairdresser, and then I became an artist like my dad. So followed in the footsteps of my parents. We're very familiar with Paul Mitchell. That's a really incredible story. Thank you for the synchronicity there. Love it.
He backed that movie, and it's won 4 awards and film festivals, and you can still get it off my site or at the museum. I took it off of Amazon because I found Amazon was doing this new trip of ordering from me and then sending them back because they had too many, and I said, wait a minute. You guys got to get your act together, so you can just basically get it off of my site, which is flashingonthe60s.com, or come to the museum. So the museum is slowly getting a group of people who are just loving it and coming up and bringing their friends and family. And I would like to see this traveled. In fact, it should be in the Haight-Ashbury, but they have already have a building there that they're going to do a museum in. And mine is actually too big for what they have so far. But if somebody came up with a building in San Francisco and wanted this show in it, that would work.
Yeah. Yeah, and it sounds like you could spend days in your museum. Not just one day, but many. Really absorbing it.
The other day, some guy came in and says, how long is it going to take for me to go through this? And I said, well, at least an hour. He says, okay, I'm coming back this week with my wife, and we're going to have plenty of time to go through it. Because they realize that it's not just something you just whisk through, that you got to stop and read everything. You know, when I had the show down at Museo Cultural, and Maria helped me down there, she was so fantastic to give me that space. Jackson Brown came, because he's a friend of mine, and he was in town at his son's wedding, and he came and he spent over an hour going through every single word on every single picture. And it was great to see him in there and to share that with him. He loved it. Graham Nash is another great supporter of the museum. You know, he hasn't seen it yet, but he's a great supporter. He supports everything I do, Graham Nash. Wonderful person.
Yeah. Yeah, I've heard really good things about him. There's so many good people out there that really just care about each other. They're carrying over the feeling from the 60s of of make love, not war. You know, I wasn't born yet. I was born in 73, but my parents were both very much of that mentality. They were very kind and loving people. My dad's still a famous artist in Baltimore. My mom's gone on to be a career coach and do a lot of life coaching and mentoring with a lot of people. And then we, you know, really were feeling that is as I grew up. And I'm really grateful to know people like that are out there doing that work still and remembering it. And the more we remember it, the better off we'll be, is to remember those take care of each other, you know?
And the planet, you know? We were told organic and no fossil fuels, and I drive a hybrid electric car, and I still have my hippie bus. It's parked right next to me. I'm looking at it in the backyard. It still runs. Whereas all those other hippie buses, they died. This one still runs. And I use it in parades and presentations at people's parties. They hire me. Because of what we did, I think what you're seeing today of trying to help the planet stay alive, this is an important, it's important what we were teaching them back during the days of the Whole Earth Catalog. My daughter's here visiting me. She's a Hare Krishna, and she's got her three kids here. And they do gardening in Peru, and they teach yoga in Peru.
How wonderful.
Sunday is her name, Sunday Peaches. And my other daughter, who is Pilar, she's in a lot of the pictures that are in the documentary because she was there at Woodstock, and she was 2 years old, and she is now runs a gallery here. In edition one, and she is presenting the Museum of the 60s on the plaza. So she hung most of the show, yeah, and she's helping run it, and she's great. It's great to have children that support your work.
I agree. I've got a few of my own, and well, I'm glad to hear that they're there supporting you. I would love to know what your best messages are for, you know, for our time this morning. I always like to ask people, what brings you joy? What brings you joy? Oh, my favorite question from Bobby Seals, I interviewed him years ago from the Black Panthers, and I said, what brings you joy? And he said, well, making love with my wife, of course, but I don't know if that's the best appropriate answer.
Well, I think what brings me joy is working with the Native Americans and helping them get what they deserve, get their land back, get their rights back. I work with the Diné a lot and have over the years, and so has Pilar. And we're totally into that. Another thing that brings me joy is to see kids enjoying nature. Yesterday, we tubed down the Rio Grande, and they're laughing and joking and carrying on with their mommy as they float down the river. That's joyful to me. Another thing that brings me joy is the fact that Bob Dylan exists. The fact that this man wrote all these incredible songs and is still alive today. And what he's given mankind in our generation and generation after in words, in poetry, I said, that brings me joy. I can't thank Bob enough for allowing me to shoot him and to license all these pictures and sell them, because that's what's kind of kept me alive through the years, is working with Bob Dylan. He even had a T-shirt for one of his concerts made with one of my pictures. And to have him be a part of my life, and a part of that, those two eras, this era and the era before, it is amazing. I mean, I studied him last year so much more than I'd ever studied him. And the Rolling Thunder review movie on TV, on Netflix, is worth watching. It's him narrating that trip. And you really find out who he is. And I studied him a lot last year when I was in Mexico, because I'm down there. I built a museum in Mexico too with Tatiana Rodriguez Anderson and Fernando Garcia. In 5 months, we finished a building that was there, and now it's in its second year of the history of that little village of Jalapa, outside of Puerto Vallarta. Where was I? I was talking about Bob Dylan. Anyway, having him, oh yeah, that's when I was studying, and I was studying Bob Dylan. I started a course online called Bob Dylan 101, and I was telling information and sharing information from the internet about him, which I think, you know, it's just a lot of kids today, you know, I'll ask them, so do you know Bob Dylan? No. You ever heard of Bob Dylan? Oh, vaguely. You're kidding me. Okay, so it's important because of his words. What he wrote, what he shared, is just astounding, okay? The answer, my friend, is blowing in the wind. I mean, the times they are changing like a rolling stone. I mean, he's amazing, okay? So he should be studied. Another person who he studied is John Lennon. The songs that he was writing at the end of his life there about honoring women. Okay, so I'm starting to write now stories to go with the pictures of the Beatles about John Lennon and what he wrote and what he was sharing about his son and raising his son and his wife, Yoko Ono. You know, there are certain people that need recognition during an era because history goes on. And God knows if we're going to be able to read about all those things correctly. I'm in the Smithsonian. I have 208 pictures in the Smithsonian. And when they were showing the pictures to Wavy Gravy, who came to the opening, when it happened, God, that was over 10 years ago, 12, 15 years ago, they took him downstairs to a box. And in the box were my pictures with rice paper in between the pictures, and you go through the pictures with white gloves, mm-hmm. and they Wavy Gravy, 500 years from now, people are going to go through this box and want to know what happened in the 60s, and there you're going to be on your hippie bus, you know? So, and he was like flabbergasted. The Smithsonian is really great.
Yeah, you know? Yeah, I'm from Baltimore, so... We're right there. We can go to the Smithsonian from the East Coast. So I've been to quite a few of the museums. And I studied with John Young, who does deep nature awareness. He's a famous nature mentor. And I met Malo Spotted Eagle, who was Rolling Thunder's son, at an event called Art of Mentoring, where 200 people get together, mostly teachers and mentors from all over the world, and create a village for a week and discover through playing in nature and through the children and through the elders how to live a different way and how to be better mentors. And Malo was a dear, sweet, sweet man, and I was very fortunate to have spent time with him. So I didn't get to meet his dad, but I definitely enjoyed Malo greatly, and I have John Young to thank for that. He's also the author of What the Robin Knows. I'm not sure if you're familiar, but he does a program called the Eight Shields of, it's at eightshields.org, and it's basically attributing, you know, the art of connection, the attributes of connection, and how we can connect better with the land through nature awareness, being better people, ultimately.
Well, I learned about that when I was up in Truchas with my husband and having babies up there. We grew all our own food, our own alfalfa for our goats. I had goat's milk. We grew our wheat, made our own bread. And working with the land is just very rewarding. And I have a garden here in the backyard. I'm looking right now. I'm sitting underneath a apricot tree. I've got a peach tree over a dwarf peach tree, a cherry tree, and a sugar plum tree, not a sugar plum, sugar pear tree, and my teepee's back there too. I always have a teepee wherever I go. Love teepee.
Yes, absolutely.
Oh, doing, you know, working with the land and growing your own food and supporting your farmers markets. We have a farmers market here every Tuesday and Saturday. I go over there and buy all our own vegetables, you know, from them, and they're great. And then we make juices here.
Nice. I spent time in Santa Fe at one point. We stayed in the Tsuki reservation area.
And it was
lovely. We almost moved there, my husband and two children at the time. And that was way back in the early 2000s. And we opted to come out northwest instead. But it was on our radar. We looked at houses. But we loved the farmer's market. And we were down there studying at the White Cloud Institute with Karen Boyd Deal. Or I guess she goes by Karen Deal now. I'm not sure, but she runs the White Cloud Institute, and they teach Tai Chi and Qigong and all kinds of things that are related to that system. And she's a mentor of Mani Wan and Montauk Chia. So we were there for that reason at the time. But I digress. I've been really a fan of your work without knowing who you were. And that's really a dream of mine, to be able to bring the message of others to the forefront so that people can share in that connection. And all these wonderful experiences that I've had with the people that I've gotten to study with, and gotten to be with Alex and Allison Gray, and work with a lot of people around the world and the country based on just serendipitous events. And I feel like I've known you forever, even though we just met.
Right. I have an Alex Gray, a Barack Obama painting up in the show. I was Barack's photographer for both of his campaigns here in Santa Fe. So I have a lot of pictures, and I was promoting him, and my car was covered with Obama bumper stickers. In fact, they used to call it the Obama Mobile.
That's great.
Yeah. So I just hope that people who hear your show share that with other people. And you can go online and you can buy my book, my movie, Flashing on the 60s, and Interviews with Icons, which are the interviews from that movie. Flashing on the 60s, I can't help you with unless you find it on eBay. And send your friends to come see the show. And hopefully we'll get to travel the show. Somebody will see it and want to travel it. But if they don't, it's going to go back in its boxes and go back in the shed.
And that would be a sad, sad moment. I bet it's a big shed that needs to house all of those beautiful pieces. Oh, thank heavens for you keeping your negatives in an acid-free box and not throwing away any of your own plates.
You can go online to my website, Lisa Law. There's, you know, there's 113 Lisa Laws out there, which is weird. But it's me holding a hibiscus flower in front of me. And you can see the museum. I post a lot of pictures of the museum. And I just posted the link to our museum in Yalapa, the History Museum of Yalapa, so you can see what we're doing down there.
Oh, fabulous.
And by the way, there's also one more museum to mention, and that is the Bethel Woods Museum, the Woodstock Museum in Bethel Woods. And I was part of that when they were interviewing people to be in it. I gave them bunch of pictures and a interview, and then we interviewed the whole hog farm and told that story. So if you go there, you'll see a lot of me in that museum. That, and I'm still helping them today with our various ideas. And it's great that that was the man who created that museum. He was in charge of cable vision in Lincoln County. And he made a lot of money. And the poor little town was fading, White Lake and Bethel. It was the old places to stay. But there was no real activity until that museum moved in. He spent $110 million building it. And people come just to see concerts there and to see the museum. And now people are moving back into the countryside in White Lake and Bethel, which is wonderful. And that's what he wanted to see happen. And so that museum, and Neil's now in charge of that museum, and he's a great guy. And he's got a great look into the future. In fact, they're going to buy the piece of land that the hog farm did the cooking on. They don't own that right now, but they're going to buy it. And then they're going to put up little plaques of pictures of where the kitchens were, where the food booths were, where the medical teepees were, and stuff like that. So when you walk around, you can get a feeling of what went on there. And it was just super. I mean, the Woodstock generation, that's what it's called, is because 400,000 people did not fight, did not rape, did not hurt each other, and all took care of each other. And that's the way it should have been from then on. That's the way it has to be. Otherwise, it's not going to be so pretty. But thank you so much for letting me be on your show. And hello to all you people out there. And take care of your planet and your Mother Earth and your children. Have natural childbirth, breastfeed, which I did, and garden.
Garden. And I'm glad to see you stepping in front of the lens, since you've been behind the lens for so many decades now, and having a blast doing it, evidently. So I'm really, really grateful that you were able to get in touch with us to have you here on KSKQ. And we're looking forward to blasting this interview. We're going to put it on the KSKQ website. It'll be up a couple days after your interview airs on Friday. It'll be airing Friday, 9 a.m. Pacific Standard Time here this week. So
you'll send me the link.
I will. And thank you again, and thank you for giving us the information of how to get in touch with you. I'll be sure to follow up with more of that after this interview airs, and we'll blast your story out there so that people can get in touch with different leads of how they can get your exhibit to travel on and reach more hearts.
All right. Thank you so much for being there, Holly, and send me a link so I can listen to the show.
Absolutely will. Well, you have a wonderful day, and thank you again for giving me so much of your time this morning. It's great to have you on the air, and I look forward to talking with you again potentially in the future when you have the next exhibit, the permanent exhibit, somewhere up. Okay. Well, thank you. Have fun with your grandchildren and your daughters, and I'll look forward to talking with you soon.
Okay.
Thanks again. Take care.
Thank you. Bye.